Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by the Farmington Civic Center, bringing a wide variety of live entertainment to the Four Corners. Country music, classic rock, and ballet, all on stage this fall. Also, on-stage theatrical performances of The Rocky Horror Show and the holiday classic A Christmas Carol. Find out more online at fmtn.org/shows. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, a community-owned and operated hospital, here for you when you need us. From emergency care to routine checkups and screenings, caregivers are here and ready to provide the safe, high-quality care you need close to home. Online at sanjuanregional.com with the latest health information and resources to help you live life better here.
Past 8 o'clock. It is Wednesday morning, the 10th day of November, 2021. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and thank you for tuning in this morning to KSJE 90.9 FM here in San Juan County, New Mexico, 103.3 FM in Southwest Colorado, and everywhere else, of course, on planet Earth from our website, ksje.com. We welcome also our viewers who are watching this visual radio program. The video is streaming live this morning out to the KSJE Facebook page, our YouTube channel, and our Twitter account. We're glad that you were with us this morning, everybody. We have a busy morning underway. We're going to be talking about COVID and kids with my guests, who we'll be talking to in the next few moments, Dr. Robert Underwood from San Juan Regional Medical Center, also Dr. Brad Scoggins from San Juan Health Partners Pediatrics. That is coming up. We'll talk about the virus and the vaccines, of course. That conversation begins in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Later on this hour at 8:50 a.m., we'll be checking in with Ron Price for another good lesson about life in the sandbox. We're all in this together, and this week he's talking with me about CIV, that critical inner voice. More on that coming up later on this hour on KSJE. Next hour, Mick Hess will take us roving with the arts. Mick is featuring some Tchaikovsky on the program today. It is a 90-minute version of the program because that'll take us to 10:30 and right on Four Quarters, our local and regional author program. And this week, author Marty Engelhardt from Silver City is speaking with Tracy Hales-Vass about her latest book, Death in a Desert Garden. You'll hear that conversation today at 10:30 right here, of course, on KSJE. Don't forget, you can also connect with us on our Instagram page in addition to our other social media platforms. And if you're a podcast person, we invite you to connect with us on our podcast platforms as well. You can subscribe to KSJE for free wherever you listen to podcasts, so check us out there. And of course, we always tell you that visual radio can take you places. A pretty cool sunrise this morning at the top of the Wolf Creek ski area that I wanted to share with you this morning. So let's take a look at that, because it's a pretty nice shot with the snow blowing around, some clouds, and the sun trying to peek through, and some blue sky there as well. That is the summit of the Wolf Creek Ski Area. Current temperature, by the way, 21 degrees there on top of the mountain. They're on their way to a high today of 31 and an overnight low tonight of 18 degrees at Wolf Creek, with some sun and snow forecast throughout the day. Back here in San Juan County, we're expecting a sunny but windy day today, with maybe a chance of a 40-mile-per-hour gust this afternoon. Today's high here in Farmington, 58 degrees. Overnight clear with a low of 32. Sunshine, less wind, we hope, tomorrow with a high of 58 on Thursday. 61 for a high on Friday. 63 on Saturday, near mid-60s for Sunday and Monday, with some partly sunny skies and overnight lows in the 30s. Well, let me turn to my two guests who are joining us on the telephone this morning, as we mentioned, from San Juan Regional Medical Center, Dr. Bob Underwood, Dr. Brett Scoggins, both on the phone with me this morning. Gentlemen, good morning, and thank you for patiently waiting for me to introduce you.
Thanks, Scott. It's really good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Scoggins, thank you for calling in as well.
Yes, happy to be here. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you very much. Dr. Underwood, let's start with you, if you don't mind. Give us kind of an idea of the conditions today at the hospital. We know that San Juan Regional has enacted that critical or crisis standards of care, and your patient numbers have been, very high. Can you give us kind of an update of how things look today?
Yeah, absolutely. So this morning we have a grand total of 178 patients that are in the facility. 87 of those are either COVID positive or waiting for a test to come back to show whether or not they're COVID positive. Our primary ICU has 14 beds. All of those are full with COVID patients, and 12 of those are on ventilators. Our intermediate care, which is kind of a step down from our ICU, has 7 of 9 beds that are currently full. So very full of COVID patients. We have 7 patients as of this morning that are in the emergency department still waiting for a bed to move into. And as you said, we have declared crisis standards of care at the facility, and really a lot of that has to do with bed capacity and bed staffing availability.
Right. And talk to me a bit about the ability to transfer patients out, I guess, to make more room if you need more room. And that was something we have talked about in the past when cases have been as high as they are, I think, these days. But it sounds to me like maybe other facilities are also seeing high numbers of patients, and so they may not be able to take any transfers from San Juan Regional Medical Center. Is that still the case across the region?
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. And in fact, I just got off a call around our regional hospitals that are here in the northwest corner of New Mexico, and all of them are reporting the same circumstance, that they're having great difficulty of transferring critically ill patients out of their emergency departments if they do not themselves have room in their facilities to house them. We talked to one of our local hospitals who actually said that the first available bed that they could find was all the way out in Plano, Texas, and they did end up transferring a patient out there. But in general, it's taking many, many calls, hours, or just getting an absolute no response. Because everyone in the state is feeling this crunch just like we are, and those patients end up having to house and wait for the next bed to open now before they can move out of the emergency department. So you're absolutely transferring out critically ill patients, and that's regardless of diagnosis. It's not just the COVID patient. That could be a trauma, a heart attack. We take care of STEMIs or heart attacks here, but various critically ill patients that have various diagnoses are in the same boat in terms of that transfer capacity or lack thereof.
Right, and the bed capacity too, I suppose, and that's something I know you all are concerned about, because if somebody's coming to the hospital with a heart attack or other medical condition and your beds are full with COVID patients, that creates an issue, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It creates a bottleneck, and the patients will be cared for, but sometimes not in what we would consider the optimal location. You know, the ICU is the ICU because of the ability to monitor, to kind of have one-on-one eyes on the patient, and when our ICU is full and we have to put those patients in other areas, we don't like that because it's not the optimal care that we would like to be able to provide. And that's why we declared crisis standards of care.
Right. And I just want to repeat that for the audiences, Dr. Underwood, because I think that's so very important that you mentioned this, and I want to stress it, that patients will be cared for at the hospital. You're not turning ambulances away. Folks will get the care that they need. It just, as you mentioned, will not be the optimum care that everyone working in and outside of the hospital would prefer. Is that an accurate statement?
That's absolutely spot on. You know, we turn nobody away. We care for everyone we can. The waits in the emergency department waiting room can be very long right now, but we're still caring for the patients that come in. The heart attacks, like I said, STEMI is short for ST segment elevation myocardial infarction, which basically is the primary kind of heart attack that you would see. And we take care of those absolutely. Our cardiac cath lab is still open, functioning. It's really after that primary care is, okay, where are we going to put that patient in a bed based on limited space availability?
Very good. Well, thank you for, again, explaining that to our audiences. I really appreciate that. And Dr. Scoggins, I'm going to come to you in just a moment, but I just also wanted to ask Dr. Underwood, again, I think the numbers we've seen about the patients that are coming in, the COVID patients that are coming in, still the vast majority of those that are hospitalized are the unvaccinated patients. Is that still correct this week?
That's absolutely correct. We just ran the numbers within the last couple of days and made it more current. So as the vaccine has been more and more available, 91% of the patients that have COVID in our facility are unvaccinated, which means we have 19% of the patients in our facility are vaccinated and end up being hospitalized. But when you compare that to a population that's 72% or more vaccinated, then that 28% of our population that haven't been vaccinated are making up 91% of our hospitalized patients.
And that's significant, obviously, and that's the numbers, and so that's where we are. Dr. Scoggins, let me turn to you a little bit about kids and the patients that maybe you are seeing, or maybe parents that you're hearing from about their questions about COVID and what precautions to take for their children. And we'll talk about vaccines in just a moment, but can you give us kind of an update on at least some of the things you're hearing in your times with patients or their parents?
Yeah, happy to, Scott. Thanks. And I think that last bit there from Dr. Underwood is going to segue nicely into a discussion about vaccines in kids, because that is probably the number one question that we're having right now. Thankfully, in spite of the Delta variant, even our COVID numbers among kids in the hospital remain very, very low. And that has been a merciful thing, particularly when you compare with prior pandemics. The fact that this is so disproportionately not affecting kids has been wonderful. Even as schools go back and case numbers rise, I'm not seeing those kids that are testing positive in schools, I'm not seeing them come into the hospital.
Right. And that's maybe been some of the maybe conversations that folks have been having, is that COVID doesn't seem to be as dangerous to children, and that leads again to the conversation about the vaccines. If kids aren't getting as sick or sick at all, if they are COVID positive, why get the vaccine? And I guess that's the next question to you, is talk to us a little bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's a great discussion to have. More and more people, including kids, are being vaccinated with one of the available mRNA vaccines, because that is the only class of vaccines that's available for kids 5 and older now. Here locally, the best access we'll have to a vaccine is the Pfizer vaccine. And that one, thankfully, has been shown to be very effective and seems to be very safe in kids. I like to hit some of the objections head on. One of the biggest concerns people have had has been with cardiomyopathy following vaccination. Thankfully, those numbers are tiny. And the kids that do seem to be affected with cardiomyopathy following the vaccination, all of them have recovered without significant morbidity. And what we can't say that about native infection with COVID. So for kids that are getting COVID nationwide, although we're not seeing as much in our area, nationwide the cases of the multisystem inflammatory syndrome in children, which is MISC, that is rising. And we are seeing a fair amount of longer-term complications in kids that have had the actual COVID infection. In fact, last week I was in a conference with Children's Colorado, and they referenced that the eighth leading cause of death among children right in the last year was COVID-19. There were 741 deaths nationwide. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but it definitely puts a single respiratory viral illness in the top 10 for kids.
Right, right. Good point. And so, obviously, parents are deciding to sign their kids up or have the conversation with their child about this vaccine to protect them in school and out of school and in all those other places. And so we've always said that I think if parents have a concern or a question, or even the child has a concern or a question, to talk to their primary care provider about that. Maybe they have some other underlying health conditions and things like that. Is that still what you hope your patients will do if they have a question about the effectiveness of the vaccine or any underlying health conditions that their children might have, to come and talk to you about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we're available for questions, and we can certainly, you know, share our experience. And you know, I think I speak for every one of the members of our group here who personally have children. They will all be coming in to get their COVID vaccine this week. We should have it available this week.
Very good. And again, you mentioned that these vaccines have been, they've been studied. They've been, I mean, there's been a lot of work on these to make sure that they are safe and authorized for emergency use, and then for the older populations authorized by the CDC, the FDA, all the other regulatory groups. And so they're just running through the normal process like any medication would, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's true. The research has been intensive, and really at no other time in history have we been able to study a vaccine on such a wide scale in such a short period of time. I always like to say that people who have gone through prior pandemics would have been green with envy that we had a vaccine as quickly as we did.
Right, right. One of the fastest developments in history. I think you're right about saying that. Dr. Underwood, let me come back to you a little bit about the community. I know the hospital has done, they had a press conference last week. I think, believe there's another community meeting scheduled for later on today about the communities kind of addressing the spread of COVID still in the area. And I know it's got to be a bit frustrating for you and your colleagues to just see these patients continue to come into the hospital asking for care, because we just have this, it sounds like, uncontrolled spread in San Juan County.
Yeah, it definitely has been. In terms of the overall state of New Mexico, we have been, unfortunately, not a list that you want to be at the top of, but the level of spread within San Juan County has definitely been an issue for the state. When we talk about, and we have lots of meetings in Department of Health, and unfortunately San Juan County has been called out with that spread. And again, you know, that kind of comes back to the vaccination issue. We have pockets within the county that are particularly low in their vaccination rates, and that's really where we're seeing the spread. And that's where our patients that end up being inpatients at the hospital are coming from. Now, we have surpassed, as of the last couple of days, the number of local cases. Now, that doesn't mean just hospitalized cases. This means cases in total within our community. We are now at a number that is higher than we were last December and January, when we thought we were at the peak of the pandemic, and we didn't think it would ever get worse than that, but we have now surpassed that point.
Yeah, and that is just not good news. And of course, you know, we rely on our healthcare professionals to help when things get this bad, and that's where we are, and that's why our hospital is at this crisis standards of care, and you are getting extra staff in. I think the Department of Health is helping, and maybe some other agencies, to bring in extra folks to help with this influx of patients. Dr. Underwood, is that what the current status is? Those folks are coming online this week or soon?
That is correct. We already have a number of people in. We still expect some. We have a federal asset that has brought in a number of providers, we call everybody a caregiver because everyone is. And so this will include nursing staff, respiratory therapists, and even some physicians and nurse practitioners who will come in and are helping us with the care of these patients. again, when we've talked about our limitations in beds, it's really not having physical beds, it's having the people to staff those beds that has been our limitation, whether that's been nursing, respiratory therapists, even phlebotomists who draw blood for the lab. Those are staffing limitations for the care of the patient. And so, yes, we do have assets that are coming in. One, again, federal. That is a group that is coming from Florida that's called the DMAT, which is a Disaster Management Assistance Team. And those folks have arrived starting at the end of last week and into the beginning of this, still a couple of more. And then there's also a contingent of folks that are coming in from essentially almost an urgent locums or temporary staffing component that is being funded by the New Mexico Department of Health in our crisis standards. And so some of those people also have started to arrive. This is our contingency primarily of nurses for our emergency department and our ICUs. And so we are incredibly grateful that we have had the opportunity to have those people come into our facility to really help out. It doesn't close all of the gaps that we have, but it has definitely provided a little bit of a relief in terms of being able to take care of the patients that are here. I don't know if you remember, but a couple of weeks ago, the number of people that were being held in the emergency department in the morning was sometimes a dozen or more. We're down to 7 as of today, which is still more than we normally would have, but it's a lot better than we were a week ago, despite our numbers being so high. Our staff are grateful. We are already have great working relationships with the temporary staff that has come in to help out. They have come in eager to work, eager to help out, and we are seeing that they are very, very well trained, and their competency for caring for these patients is really stellar. So we couldn't be happier to have that extra help here for us.
Good to know. It sounds like they are able to hit the ground running and maybe provide some also breaks for your other staff, who I imagine have been working some long hours and maybe long days without a break during this whole time. So that helps them as well, I would think.
Yeah, absolutely, Scott. The dedication, the amount of extra work, not to mention just the extra physical work, but the extra emotional load and toll that is put on our staff has been completely over the top. And the fact that they keep coming in and keep giving it their all, I couldn't be more proud of the team.
Well, and we appreciate all their efforts, and we know it's been it's been a long haul, and it's not over yet, unfortunately. I do want to put a plug in for this community town hall that the hospital is putting on this evening. It is a virtual event on it's a WebEx, and San Juan Regional is sharing the link and all the other login information, and we'll do that too on our social media platforms. But I just want to let the community know that is planned for 7 to 8 p.m. tonight. This evening, including San Juan Regional Medical Center CEO Jeff Bourgeois, Dr. Brad Greenberg, a regular guest on this program, who is the emergency medicine physician at the hospital, Suzanne Smith, the chief nursing officer, will also be a part of this town hall, in addition to Farmington Mayor Nate Duckett, also Farmington Police Chief Steve Hebby, and representing San Juan County, Commissioner John Beckstead and San Juan County Sheriff Shane Ferrari will be a part of this. And from the New Mexico Department of Health, Dr. Laura Parajon will be also on this community town hall tonight, again, 7 p.m. It's a virtual town hall. You can log on from any device. And again, we'll be sharing all that information on our social media platforms. But again, Dr. Underwood, you know, how important is it to get these other representatives from communities who were there last week, too, at this news conference? We heard from the mayors, I think, of Farmington, Aztec, and Bloomfield, as well as a lot of other folks from the community, of just how important it is with this spread and the resources that are being strained, not just at the hospital, but I would think in other areas as well in the city and county.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that there's a couple of components to that. One is a message of solidarity. You know, these are the leaders of our community, and we're all in this together. It is about the health of our community and what we can do to take care of our community as a whole. So to have Mayor Nate Duckett on and to have Steve Hebby on I think really helps share that message across the board that we're all in this together, trying to do whatever we can to take care of our community. So I think that that's really important. And yes, absolutely, it is a resource strain on the hospital, and we focus on that primarily because that's where the rubber meets the road, if you will. But it's a strain on all resources across the community, from our ambulance services to law enforcement. All of these things impact what we do as a community. It impacts our economy. It is really... And that's one of the things about pandemics. It is something that is well beyond just the healthcare resources, but part of the community as a whole. And how do we band together and how do we lead the community to do everything we can to help control the spread?
Right. Thank you very much, Dr. Underwood. Dr. Scoggins, I want to come back to you a little bit about, again, kids and vaccines. And now, of course, with the rollout of the vaccines for children ages 5 to 11, there was a tweet just this week from someone, no one other than Big Bird, that was a bit controversial. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around why Big Bird can be controversial, but it was. But again, for parents that have some concerns, the risks, I guess, of even a young person contracting COVID and getting a severe case. As you mentioned, we've had almost 800 deaths of children from COVID-19 in the United States, have we not?
Yeah, that's the last data that I heard in the conference last week.
Got you. And so, again, the risks, I guess, of not being vaccinated seem higher than the risks of getting vaccinated. You mentioned the heart issue, which is minimal from the studies that have come back, right, from some of these younger people getting the vaccine and having that type of a reaction.
Yeah, that's correct. Obviously, those children, if they do develop, cardiac issues related to the vaccine, they're followed very closely. And heart function seems to be completely restored within a matter of weeks in most cases. So, thankfully, the risk seems pretty minimal. And then if you hold up, the reason we vaccinate against any illness is to help keep it from getting out of control in a population. So, children are this large block of respiratory virus, transmitters. And as they go back to school, and we do want them back in school, there were countless detriments to them being out of school for as long as they were. And if they can come back to school and they can do so safely, not only for themselves, but for their teachers and relatives that they may take the virus back home to, you put all that together in a little package, and it does make vaccination an essential component of getting past this pandemic.
Right, as vaccines are for all these kind of childhood illnesses and other things that we vaccine and vaccinate against, correct, when kids go to school. This isn't anything new, is it?
No, not at all. Not at all. And a lot of people worry about, about vaccine mandates, and I think that tends to be a point of a lot of contention among many people. And I like to point out that, we already have, if you will, vaccine passports to go to school. I print them out all the time for kids who are going to public school. If you want to attend group educational settings, there is a requirement to be vaccinated to attend. You could say that chicken pox is a fairly mild self-limited illness, but we know that when we don't vaccinate against chicken pox, when it gets transmitted often to teenagers and above, we have some really significant complications of varicella that people don't often think about. So, yeah, vaccinations has been one of the most amazing tools of modern medicine.
Right, and public health.
And public health, yep.
Indeed. And I know that was a big conversation almost a year ago about kids not being in school and everyone wanting to and arguing that kids needed to be back in school, and now they're able to be back in school with this one request to wear a mask and to be vaccinated. I guess that's two requests, but to be vaccinated, and that really is the kind of the way forward, and to get back on the playing fields or the courts and athletics and band and choir and all those things that we want kids to be able to do in school seems to be the way forward. Would be to be safely vaccinated and be able to gather once again in groups to do those things.
Yes, arguably that's the better way. Yeah, even just the time lost and how miserable this infection seems to be, I think you know, the safety of the vaccine has been well proven. And gosh, if you can avoid a nasty cold at the, you know, at the very least, that would have you out for a couple of weeks. That alone may be a reason for some people.
Right. Very true. Very true. Well, gentlemen, I really appreciate both of you joining me this morning to talk about, again, the current conditions of COVID-19 in our community and how the hospital is dealing with that. Some of the questions that I know parents may have about the vaccines. Dr. Scoggins, I appreciate you being on the program as well to talk about that. And as you mentioned, it sounds like you're available to answer any other specific questions that maybe folks might have, but or they could talk to their primary care physician or their pediatrician to really help set their minds at ease about the way forward out of this, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very good. Well, thank you. Dr. Scoggins from San Juan Health Partners Pediatrics, thank you for being with me this morning.
Yes, thank you, Scott. Appreciate the opportunity to share the message.
You bet. You're very welcome. Dr. Underwood, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for your time. I know you're a busy guy as well.
I appreciate it, Scott. And any time, again, helping share our message, we always appreciate the support from KSJE.
Well, it's been over 18 months, and I haven't lost your number yet, so I'll keep calling you. Thank you both.
All right.
Thank you very much. Thanks. Dr. Bob Underwood, San Juan Regional Medical Center, Dr. Brad Scoggins, my guest this morning here on KSJE. KSJE is supported by the Farmington Civic Center, bringing a full slate of entertainment to Farmington and San Juan County. Charles Dickens, A Christmas Carol, Tuesday, December 21st at 7:30 p.m. The Farmington Civic Center, 200 West Arrington in downtown Farmington. Find out more online at fmtn.org/shows or 505-599-1148. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.